Hey, glad you're with us, folks. Jaguars Today live on this Tuesday from Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks. Hi, LB. Good morning, Lauren Brooks.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm struggling.
Ah, you're not struggling. I am. I'm sad today.
What's going on?
Lauren's taking a job as the head greenskeeper at Augusta National. And
really?
Yes. Congratulations once again on that.
Quite a step
up.
You're welcome. For anyone listening in, that's not 100% factually accurate.
No.
But she is taking a new job, and hence today is her final day as producer of Jaguars Today. We're hoping that, like, when your new job, when you have a day off and you want to go slumming, you stop by and say hello to the little people, you know.
Heck yeah. I'm going to come in my bathing suit and stop in,
Mark,
and then I'll
Long's
go to the beach after.
Be here every day.
Okay, I didn't mean, like,
case.
Just wearing my bathing suit.
Oh.
I meant on my way to the beach.
Oh, okay, or the pool.
Or the pool,
matter.
Yeah.
We
I'll stop in there first, and then I'll go hang out.
We got a pool and a pond. Pond would be good.
That's
you.
True. Yeah. There are pools there. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Lauren.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
LB, we're going to miss you.
Let's not talk about it, because I really will start crying.
Stop. Are you going to stop by and visit us today?
Absolutely.
It's not really not bathing suit weather, but Mark Long's keeping his fingers crossed. You know, saw him in the hallway earlier, and he's hopeful. So, all right, Lauren Brooks, ladies and gentlemen, who will stay on as a co-host of Helmets and Heels,
yeah.
her highest priority show on this station, Jeff. But LB will be hosting tomorrow, as a
That's
matter of
right.
fact, Jessica Blaylock.
Right, so really I'm not saying goodbye.
Show.
Just
no, well, to me, you are.
You are.
Yeah, we're saying goodbye.
We're taking tomorrow off.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
We couldn't be bothered to come in on your final day of Jaguars
that's
today.
That's cool.
So, but you're not producer tomorrow. You're host.
Right, and you'll be playing golf. That's way better.
I will be playing golf.
Good for you.
And first time in four
Are
months.
You playing where Lauren's going to be the greenskeeper?
She got me the hookup, dude. I couldn't pass
You are welcome.
Up. Tony and I are going to go roll them 12 on the stimp meter up there at Augusta. No, we'll not be making it up to Augusta National. But haven't played in 4 months, Loggy. Got the I had a torn meniscus and have not had surgery. They did a little procedure on it, and hopefully – it'll hold up tomorrow for 18 holes. We'll find
You're gonna
out.
Find out.
Well, either that or I'm going under the knife. It's one of the two, because I'm not going a year without golf. That's not going
to
happen.
I used to play a lot of golf, and then all the surgeries, it seemed like every year, would always like set me back
right.
you know, again, and I just finally I gave it up.
Were you pretty good?
I was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I was ever great, but I mean, I grew up playing in the little town that I grew up in, Sterling, Virginia. We had a little par 3 golf course. And so, I mean, I grew up playing golf at a very early age, and then when I was, fishing, and I mean, still fishing and hunting and all that kind of stuff, but used to take part in golf college, played a little bit in college, you know, and then at the one day, the last time I ever played was, I think, about 91, I guess it was, and on the front nine, I was just unbelievable. I was like one or two over, you know, after the front nine on my dad's course that he was a member of. And then on the back nine, ended up like 7 or 8, 9, 10 over, something like that. Broke 3 clubs, threw a couple in the pond.
Oh, no.
And then like 3 days after that, I was to report to camp in New York, and I brought my clubs up there, walked in the equipment room, and put them on the table. And I said, does anybody play right hand and need a set of clubs? And I gave them away. And I have not played golf, you know, consistently since. I've played 2 rounds of golf since 91.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, because I don't know, Tony. I may have been known to snap a club or perhaps throw one. I've mellowed, I think, a lot, Jeff.
The Hulk comes out every now
see,
and then.
See, that was my problem. See, I'm very competitive. And see, and if I am struggling at something and I'm not doing well in something, I get very, very frustrated.
Yes.
And I said to myself, I said, wait a minute. I said, my life and my career revolves around competitive game. A competitive game, probably one of the most competitive games there is in football. And I said, you know, this is not helping me psychologically.
This is not good for your downtime.
No, it's not. And so I gave the golf clubs away, bought more fishing poles and more guns, and then on I went.
I've had a couple of epic meltdowns, including one at Cimarron once where I was on, I want to say it was the 14th hole, but I might be wrong on the hole. It's one of the many parts. Every hole on Cimarron's got water, and I'm on the tee box, and I just duff a tee shot. I mean, roll it off the front of the tee box. That driver goes sailing out of my hand before I even think about it into the lake. But there's like a little pile of reeds or something growing in the middle, and it's kind of sticking in them. And it's sticking up out of the water. I can see it. And I'm like, that water can't be more than 2 feet deep. Mm-hmm. So I took off the golf shoes. I'm in shorts. I go wading in there. First step, no big deal. Second step, up to my chest. I mean, just woof, right to the bottom. Sure, there weren't any snakes or alligators in there, but I waded out there. I got it, Jeff. And the thing I'm most proud of is I finished the round barefoot. Oh yeah,
and they didn't throw you off.
You can no.
Usually they do when you're barefoot.
No, I was barefoot. They, you know, nobody out there to see me at the time. Sorry, Cimarron.
See, I still love playing golf every now and again. And I actually played one round of golf with Kevin Favor. Gosh, it was probably
Kev's good, right?
He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now. I mean, I'm talking like scratch.
Right. He
I mean,
used to be a caddy back in the day.
But some of the best hand eye coordination that you would ever imagine. I mean, most people listen to the outdoor show on Saturday morning and think there's no way in the world that, you know, those rednecks can play golf. Favor will go out and shoot scratch.
I knew Kevin originally when he owned International Golf and Tennis down in St. Augustine. That's how I got. And then I found out, oh, he does this outdoor stuff too. Who knew? You know,
he's a ringer now.
More of, as a golf guy.
He's a ringer. I mean, I've seen him. Two things that just amaze me about Kevin: his hand-eye coordination is unbelievable. Playing golf, first off, you know, he shoots, you know, maybe a couple over par. And then sporting clays and skeet and trap.
Oh yeah,
he's unbelievable. I mean, literally, me and him went up to this event one time at Okefenokee Sporting Clays in Folkestone, Georgia. And, you know, you're basically a perfect score is 100 because you're 100 rounds and you get 100 clay targets. And he shot like a 93. You know, and you shoot in the 90s. I mean, you're competitive. I mean,
sure.
I'm talking you can compete. And he was shooting in the 90s and hadn't done it ever. That was the first time he'd ever done it. And he
just
shoots like a 93. I'm like, are you kidding me? He's unbelievable.
Wow, there you go. Hidden talents, man. Okefenokee, what was it?
Okefenokee Sporting Clays.
Sporting Clays,
Roni's the guy that runs a lot of the stuff up there and is an excellent teacher who I learned a lot from. And then golf, since that one round that I played with Kevin like 8 or 9 years ago, I've played two rounds of golf since then. And both of them were up at Cabin Bluff, which is a hunting, fishing resort up off of Exit 7. And they have a six-hole Davis Love III design golf course that has three tee boxes, so you can play it as a team.
Yeah.
And we play beer golf. Okay, so you go and you get your cooler on the golf cart and you drink a beer hole and you pick one club per hole and you have to play that club from tee box to literally for putting. And you want to talk about fun. I mean, that was a lot of fun. We do this every year when we have the Outdoor Show weekend up there at Cabin Bluff. You should come join us for that.
It sounds fun, Tony, until I'm stuck in a bunker with a 3-wood.
But you got that's the challenging part of it. See, that makes it fun. See, I mean, anybody can hit a sand wedge out of a trap.
Sure,
you know, but
sometimes
who can hit a 3-wood out of a trap?
You're right.
Right?
You're right.
And
you know
who can putt with a 3-wood?
You just gotta tell yourself when you're getting out of that bunker on the third shot. I probably would have been here on my third shot anyway with the wedge.
Exactly.
See, the way I measure golf now, golf success to me now, is finishing the round plus. And when I talk about plus, I'm talking plus in balls. So in other words, I hit off the tee. If I lose a ball, I need to find two somewhere on that hole.
But you're not one of these guys that really works the edge of every lake, are you?
Absolutely.
Oh, you are.
Yeah,
okay.
Because I'm so bad, I've got to work the edge of the lake.
All right. Loggy's out there, Tony.
If I find a striped range ball, that's like gold.
You know those ball retrievers count as clubs, man. You know, he's probably got three of them in there for all different varieties of.
No, I just play barefoot.
Do you?
And just walk right in, yeah.
Just walk right in. See, there you go. We were at more in common than we realized. Barefoot golf. Loggy, we'll get to plenty of Jaguars stuff looking back on last Thursday night. Got Houston coming up to finish the season. What'd you do with a Sunday off in the middle of the NFL season?
Absolutely nothing.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was, you know, spent some time with my son. We actually, over the weekend, we saw the new Hobbit movie.
Okay, Tony saw
the
you
Lord
guys
of the Rings.
What'd you think of it?
Well, first of all, the first 45 minutes were tremendous.
Oh my goodness!
Because you know the last movie, it left you hanging when the dragon comes out of the mountain, and then you know, and then the movie ends. You're like, what the hell's going on? And so the first 45 minutes to get a little bit of a conclusion with the dragon was tremendous, and then the rest of it, some of the battle scenes there were unbelievable.
Really cool. Yeah.
Really.
Spoiler
cool.
alert! I haven't seen the preceding one. Like, I haven't had years to see it.
There's a dragon.
I'm joking.
That's some of the greatest sequence of movies.
There's a dragon.
That there is, and it's it's actually got some very sad moments in this last one.
It did.
Yeah, very
Hobbit.
Sad moments.
The Hobbit will make you tear up, man.
Legolas again, man. That dude is just, he's unbelievable.
Who?
The elf. He is unbelievable. When he goes skywalking basically on that crumbling bridge,
yes.
I was geeking out
Me
in
too.
The theater. It was so awesome.
It was good. It was good.
What do you think about Tony's sweater?
Digging it.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah, baby.
He's very festive
Christmas.
Today. That's got to hit Twitter. A picture of Tony's sweater is going to hit Twitter today. It's red with some green rows of Christmas trees on there, several large snowflakes, many tiny snowflakes.
I remember when I was like 7, 8 years old and my mom taking me and my brother, you know, to get family pictures taken around Christmas time with sweaters like
that. Matching sweaters, probably, right? Yeah. My family never did the whole mat. My sister is diabolical about it. She's got one of those walls at the house of every year, you know, the matching outfit pictures. I guess that's okay to look back on. I don't know how much fun it was for them at the time. All right, Loggy, we'll take a break here. We'll come back. We'll open the phone lines for you. We'll dig into Thursday night's third victory of the season for the Jacksonville Jaguars. What did Jeff see on the film in terms of the play of Blake Bortles, the offensive line, the defense? Are they playing as well as we think they are? All those things we'll get into. If you want to talk any aspect of Jaguar football with us, you're certainly welcome to do that. 641-1010 is the number. The fan feedback spotlight today, well, it's all about LB. Lauren Brooks, ladies and gentlemen, tweet us and tell us, you know, tweet Lauren in particular. Don't worry about tweeting us, but tweet Lauren at 1010XL Lauren. And thank her for all the great work that she's done on Jaguars today and wish her the best in her new job as head greenskeeper at Augusta National or whatever it is. She won't really, she's being a little secretive about it, Tony. Something in the landscape architecture field,
yep.
I'm told, but it's a big hush-hush kind of deal. I'm guessing it's Augusta National. It may be Sawgrass. I really don't know. So certainly do that. Take the time to do that, and you can post a message as well at facebook.com/Jaguars today. Back with your phone calls, and we'll start looking at last Thursday's Jaguars victory over the Tennessee Titans next. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. LB, you still picking the music? What's the story? We got a theme today. This is Tyler Devitt time. We're done. We had our final music theme yesterday.
Yeah.
Took me 6 tries, Jeff. Every song had goodbye in the title, and for some reason it took me the entire show to figure out what the theme was with Lauren yesterday. Go figure.
Jeff would have gotten it for the first time ever.
He probably would have. He's the one person that's not going to miss the music theme, I think, Lauren.
No, not at all.
I'm not guessing it.
Not even a little bit.
A lot of folks, by the way, going to miss your music before mm-hmm. you're even gone. So Tyler's got a lot to live up to in a lot of ways. All right.
Good
by
luck,
the way,
Tyler.
My buddy Tony Penna was on hold, I suppose. I didn't see the message there. And I couldn't remember who I was playing with when the club went helicoptering into the lake. Might have been 16 at Cimarron Jack. I don't think I played the final 4 holes soaking wet and bare feet, but who the hell knows? It was a while ago. All right, 641-1010 if you want to get in. We'll get to your calls momentarily. Let me get a couple of quick impressions from you. Overall, Jags, victory over the Titans. Blake Bortles will start there. How do you think he played?
I think the best thing that he displayed was a pathetic fourth series on offense to be able to bounce back and to put a drive together. I mean, that's kind of been his story all year long, and that when it gets to crunch time and they need something bad, he has a way to find a way to get it done. But, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Toby Gerhardt. I mean, he was the one who really kick-started that offense on that 2nd-and-9 run or 2nd-and-10 run, whatever it was, and he scampered for 14 yards. Then he had a couple other key runs on that. But for Blake Bortles to be able to go into that game, to play poorly, to be down by 10, and then all of a sudden when it comes crunch time where he needs to tuck it and run it, and he does, and he's sacrificing his body, as a veteran player and as a teammate of a quarterback like that, I think that's the thing that you probably appreciate more than anything, is that he's willing to throw his body around for you to get a win. That, to me, is the thing that you take away from that game the most, you know.
I thought that was pretty evident when you were talking to Red Bryan after the game.
I kind of brought that up to Red, and then Red is probably one of the greatest interviews that there is in the locker room. He's a very thoughtful, very intelligent guy. And for him to go right there without really me kind of trying to take him there,
right.
I mean, all I was trying to bring up was, you know, the performance of your quarterback, you know, and that, hey, that was pretty gutsy. And then he just starts, you know, I mean, just talking in glowing terms of Blake Bortles. You know, and you go all the way back to the preseason before Blake Bortles was even, you know, named the starter, and you started talking to guys, and they just started talking about his demeanor and the way that he carries himself. And look, I understand that he's a long ways away from being a franchise quarterback. He's a long ways away as far as accuracy goes, understanding defenses, you know, having the proper footwork and everything else. But there's some things that you just can't coach. And he appears to have the things that you can't coach, which is demeanor, swagger, confidence, moxie, it, you know, whatever it is that you want to call it. He seems to have it.
Yeah, I agree. And that's been one of the things that they've said that they liked about him all the way from Dave Caldwell drafting him to all the veterans on this team, the younger guys as well. You know, he's a natural-born leader, so it seems.
And they need to get, you know, they need to get better performance around him and more consistent performances around him to really evaluate where he's at. We actually posed the question last night on Jaguars Monday with Pacelli and JP and Pete Prisco, and that, you know, where would you rank Blake Bortles amongst the other young quarterbacks? You know, Derek Carr and Teddy Bridgewater. I don't know if anybody else really played. I mean, Johnny Manziel's played just a little bit, and it's hard to draw that comparison. I mean, when you're on offense, essentially starting, you know, six or seven rookies, you know, how do you really evaluate the quarterback position when they're so young and so raw everywhere else? You know, so you can't really look at the big picture. You really have to look at some of the finer points of his play. And I like what I see so far because, I mean, when you look at the roster, Marquise Lee started. Alan Hearns is essentially a starter in a three wide receiver set. This year you've had Allen Robinson as well. You've had two rookie offensive linemen. Luke Jokel, I still consider a rookie. In fact, this game will be his first game to where he surpasses his rookie year because this is start 17 at left tackle. And then you had a second-year running back in Denard Robinson, you know, playing this year a lot. You know, so, I mean, that's incredibly young.
Right, playing with a variety of backup tight ends as well throughout the year, you know, missing.
Yeah, and who were they for a while? I mean, when Mercedes got hurt and Clay Harbor was kind of iffy,
right.
Mickey Schuler in the game, Nick Jacobs, a guy that they got off of the practice squad in New Orleans. Wow. I mean, you talk about a perfect storm.
All right, let's get a phone call or two in to talk about the offense here. We'll get more into the offensive line and other positions coming up. Jeff Loggeman here with you. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars today on 1010XL. We'll start with Derek. If you want to get on board, 641-1010. Good morning, Derek. How are you?
Good. How you guys doing?
Good. What's up?
Just wanted to say to Jeff, I enjoy watching the show on CBS. On Channel 4. As far as breaking down the offense, and with my own DVR, I get to break it down, and maybe I only get to see a half a field, but at least I can do something with the offense. And I'm not sure if you heard the comments that Phil Simms made on Bortles, which it seems as though he put in the words what I had been maybe seeing a little bit of, mm-hmm. and that is, he's obviously got great potential, but maybe a little bit more accuracy, and I think he could be one of the top 10 quarterbacks, I would say, in the near future.
Yeah, and I had a long conversation with Phil before the game, not a long one, but talked with him for quite some time. Because, I mean, Phil was a really good quarterback in the National Football League. Phil was never a great quarterback. But having played the position, you know, I wanted to kind of get his opinions and thoughts on that. And he brought up something that I've been kind of wondering about for quite some time, is that, you know, Phil said that, you know, look, when you look at Zach Mettenberger, he may throw a better ball than Blake Bortles at times. And he's probably right because, you know, a lot of the routine things that Blake has don't look routine. And he needs to get to the point where some of those routine throws where a guy is wide open, they're playing pitch and catch. And right now he's not playing pitch and catch on anything.
Is he thinking about mechanics?
Well, you know, I mean, boy, when you're a rookie quarterback, I mean, take your pick of what you could be thinking about. There's so much things that are going on offense that, you know, you could be thinking about coverage. You could be thinking about snap count, responsibilities, checks, protection. You know, it was interesting, you know, and I go back to bringing up what we had talked about on the Gus Bradley show, I think about 2 weeks ago. And I asked Gus about coverages, and I said, you know, give me the different variations in coverage that you may have. And he said, you know, well, you know, cover two, you play maybe five different variations of cover two. And then when you play quarters, you have a couple different variations of that. You probably got four or five different variations of a three deep coverage, you know, and then you got your mans and different types of man. You got your zeros. I mean, so for a young quarterback, he's looking at approximately, you know, 16 different coverages that he could see on game day. Whereas in college, he's seeing maybe four or five, you know, maybe, you know, because colleges keep it pretty simple. So, I mean, that's a lot to really digest for a young quarterback on top of trying to understand the entire offense and set the protection and everything else, because most of the time in college, all those things are basically preset and they're not changing. But in the NFL game, I mean, it's always changing. Never, nothing is ever consistent. It's always fluid.
You didn't watch the game last night, right? Monday Night Football?
I watched some of it.
Okay. Did you see early on, they're talking about this, where Cincinnati turned the tables on Peyton Manning, basically. You're talking about all these things that quarterbacks have to process. Well, he tries to give you a lot of things to process as a defense, moving guys around, some dummy counts, different things he's doing. But Cincinnati was getting in a look almost right up until the snap of the football, and then switching at the very last second, and he was getting confused. It was clear he was throwing into coverage a lot more than he typically does.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the great Peyton Manning.
Right. Well, for one thing, A, why don't more teams try it? How difficult is it from a defensive player's perspective to be able to pull that off? And B, it just shows if you can do that at this stage of his career to that guy, the mental challenge of playing quarterback is pretty evident for a young player in this league.
Yeah, I mean, I think that shows a lot. I mean, I actually had a conversation with Gus, and I think it was last week or the week before, and it wasn't related to the multiple coverages that a young quarterback sees, but we were actually talking specifically about Peyton Manning and some of Gus's experiences with Peyton, and he said, look, you know, Peyton is a guy that he watches everything that you do, and if all of a sudden you'd make one small little wrinkle, and something that you've been consistent about for a very long period of time, it will confuse him, which is kind of crazy, you know, that you could actually confuse a guy like Peyton Manning.
He studies it so much, he knows what he expects to see.
But he studies it also so much that if he sees something that he hasn't seen before, or some slight variation of something that you've been consistent with, it throws him off a little bit. You know, much like the Jaguars last year at Denver. And look, they played pretty well on defense.
They did.
You know, Paul Posluszny had the big pick six and all that. And all they did was make one little small change in their coverage, and it was an alignment. So they made one small change in an alignment to play one particular coverage, and it confused Peyton Manning. That's why they had such great success against them, relatively speaking, you know, obviously. So, you know, even a veteran quarterback has challenges of understanding that. So you can imagine what it's like for a young quarterback.
How tough is it, though, from a defensive player's perspective, to do that last second drop out of whatever you're doing, show this and give them that? Is it difficult, or maybe is it not that hard?
No, it's hard because, I mean, you know, I mean, football players are creatures of habit. And if all of a sudden you try to break a habit or a trend or a trait, all of a sudden you still have to be able to function from maybe a different angle. It changes the way that you do it. And so you have to have somebody that's able to think through that, to be able to execute something from maybe a different angle. That's not easy.
So not
to
every
do.
Defense could pull that.
No, no.
Gotcha. Because it seemed like, wow, this. Cincinnati, we've been trying this for 15 years at least.
Well, Cincinnati's very veteran in the secondary. I remember when the Jaguars were getting ready to go to Cincinnati prior to the big trip to London. You know, I was talking about how all the first round picks that Cincinnati has in the secondary, and I think they have one that's a very young first round pick. But the rest of them,
Frank Kirkpatrick, who had a pick six last night.
Yeah, and the rest of them are veteran guys, you know, so they've been around the block quite a bit. So if there was anybody that was going to be able to confuse Peyton Manning, it would be a secondary like that.
Jeff Logman, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Let's go back to the phones. Jim, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I know this is the holiday season. It's not Thanksgiving, but I'm just going to tell you guys. One, thanks for the great show during the season. It's been good because you guys utilized your resources with the Jags, becoming the station of the Jags, to make a great show. Make it very difficult for me to schedule anything on my calendar between 10 and 12 every day. So
that's awesome. Thank you, man.
I appreciate that. Also, another thanks to Jeff. I was listening to the show last week when somebody at the very end of the show called in and talked about Gus Bradley and you, you know, what makes you the expert aspect of things, Jeff. As someone who makes a ridiculous living providing expert witness testimony, it's amazing to me what people consider experts nowadays, so I just appreciate you rebuffing him. And from the standpoint of that, just to say thank you, a good friend of ours, where you take your deer meat every year, has a couple of nice big steaks waiting for you whenever you show up. So just I appreciate that. He's a good friend of mine as well. But anyway, now my question.
You're talking about Gary at Tillman's, by the way.
Yes,
he's a great
yes.
guy.
But anyway, I was going to ask you a question. The thing, if I understand correctly, the CBA has limits on the contacts between the team and the coaches and players during the off season. Why is that? I'm just curious because to me, it'd be like if you said, okay, Jim, you can only work 30 weeks out of the year. You know, it's very hard to become very, proficient at that. And I just was curious what the reasoning behind the CBA, if that is the case.
Well, I think the reasoning is that the time requirements of the players in the off season and the, when the negotiations were going on, that was viewed as a little bit of ammo on the player side, and that the players association could tell the players, look, we were able to control the amount of exposure to injury that you guys would have throughout the off season. And I get that. But I also think that some of those limitations are a little bit over the top, and that if you have young players, I'm not saying that you should have the ability to take them out on the practice fields at will, but you should be able to at least have some type of communication between coach and player about game plan, et cetera, without exposing them on the field, and they limit that, and that's a shame. And I think that that will be addressed at some point in the future. But the players, that the owners consider that something that they're not willing to give up. The players want to get something in return if they get the availability more so in the off season. So it's all about negotiations. It's all about collective bargaining. And what am I going to get if I give you that? And it's a shame.
But to some degree, isn't it a slippery slope that the player side is afraid of? They're saying, look, we've already got these, quote, voluntary mini camps that coaches chastise you for, whether they've become more savvy about doing it in public because it is against the CBA to discipline players for not showing up for something that's voluntary. And then, you go to the situation, well, look at Peyton Manning. He's coming into this facility every day. We've got to be like that organization, and it becomes more and more. And what becomes the limit? Well, if they're getting together for 3 weeks of voluntary work, why don't we do four? And I think that's what the players side doesn't, let's make some bright line distinctions between what you're allowed to do and not allowed to do.
Yeah, but it went over the top. They limit the number of days you can be on the practice field as far as a team. But if Frank Selfo, for example, Frank Selfo wants to take Blake Bortles out on the field in February and just show him a few things after sitting down and watching some film with him of some of the, if Frank went and put together a film edit or a video edit, because now there's no longer film, it's all basically on computers, and show him some of the things that he needs to work on and give him, let's say, five breakdowns on film. And then to take him out on the field and just to show him a couple examples of how he can improve on that in February, he can't do either one of them. He can't actually sit down and meet with him. He can't actually sit down and talk with him, and he can't take him out on the field to work with him one-on-one, and that's a shame.
I can see both sides. It is a shame, especially if you got a young quarterback who's eager to do it, but at the same time,
why all of these off-season academies have popped up. Jordan Palmer.
Yeah, he's become pretty famous.
Has become, a commodity because the guys are now going to go and see him. The quarterback that played at Florida State and Carolina Panthers.
Chris Wanky
is doing something similar to that. But it's not just about working with young quarterbacks that are coming up for the draft. There are camps and academies. IMGI's got one, I guess, in Sarasota, that they're popping these things up to where guys can actually go. I mean, Peyton Manning goes to Duke and works with the guy there at Duke. Eli does the same thing. And that's why these places are popping up, because they can't work out with their own staff, which to me, I understand that, you want to be able to limit the exposure, but at the same time, there's got to be a way to do that without getting it over the top. But the fear is, from the Players Association side, it goes all the way back to Jimmy Johnson. And Jimmy Johnson in 1989 and in the offseason going into prior to 1990 went over the top as far as requirements of his team, OTAs, on-the-field stuff, and then they were kind of in reaction to that, the NFLPA said, look, we got to limit what they can do on the field. And then Tom Coughlin tried to take it up to another notch, in 1995. And then there was a reaction to him because Tom tried to sidestep the CBA by saying, okay, we're going to do this in the offseason under the guidelines that the NFLPA and the owners set. according to the Jimmy Johnson era. And Tom Coughlin said, okay, well, there's a little loophole. And the loophole was is that you could have all of these in the offseason, and then before you went to camp. Well, Tom said, okay, well, we're going to ask our guys. We're going to do everything in the offseason. We're going to ask our guys to come in a week before training camp. So it was actually trying to stack on more stuff,
right,
but actually attaching it to training camp. So then the Tom Coughlin rules came into effect in that you couldn't ask guys to report to a mandatory report date prior to 14 days prior to the first preseason game unless it was an injured guy or a rookie, et cetera, et cetera. So you've had all kinds of reactions through the years on that.
Note to self, become an expert at something in 2015. Apparently expert testimony pays very well. According to our last caller. Thank you, Jim. We got to take a timeout. 641-1010. If you want to get on board, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony, and Lauren Brooks here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Jaguars today. Last show for Tony and I before Christmas. At least Jaguars today.
Yeah.
Fat Tuesday tonight.
Yeah, featuring... I got the show tonight featuring me.
And what? And your opinions on a variety of what?
Well, I am going to have Gene Williams on the show tonight talking
a little
Florida State football as Jameis had his hearing and everything this weekend. They're now 9 days away from the first semifinals in college football history on New Year's Day. So we'll talk about that a little bit, and I'll get into some Christmas stories and memories, that kind of thing.
This is the first season I haven't had Gene on in like a decade.
I know.
Man, you know, not doing the college thing anymore. So certainly wish him happy holidays from all of us here.
We'll do.
Enjoy your show tonight.
Oh, I'm going to have fun. I'm looking forward to being done with it so that I know I have the next couple days off, but I am looking forward to the show tonight.
So Christmas stories. Are you going to break out the old, what was the best gift you ever received when you were a kid growing up from Santa Claus?
That kind of thing, yeah.
So what was it, Jeff?
Oh,
Did it fire ammunition?
Well, I mean, were we talking, you know, Santa Claus?
Santa Claus, Christmas time gift.
It was one of two things. Probably a bike one time that I got.
Yeah.
And the other thing was probably the G.I. Joe headquarters.
Oh, very nice.
Ah.
Yeah, it was big time.
G.I. Joe, which ones? Like the 11-inch, the full-size, the big G.I.
Joe? Yeah, the big G.I. Joe.
Yeah, the big
one. We didn't have the little ones back then.
Yeah, the big one. Did you have the one where you could pull his dog tags and he would say like eight different phrases?
Well, the greatest one of all was the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip.
Oh, of course he had the Kung Fu grip.
Yeah.
Do you remember like...
There was a running joke, by the way, about that.
There are probably a lot of jokes about the Kung Fu grip back in the day. Do you remember the knockoff they had called Big Jim?
No.
They had Big Jim, like Big Josh, and Big whatever. Big Jim basically had, you pressed a panel on his back, and he had the karate chop motion. And his hand was always in a permanent karate chop. And all his tools and different things, you know, he could hold them in his hands. He could, I don't know, chop with a shovel. I never understood the purpose of chopping with a shovel, but you kind of get the idea.
The greatest gift, though, that I ever got for Christmas, the one that probably got the most use, was, you know, the Little Green Army Men.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, you know, obviously they broke it back out for Toy Story, which was awesome. And I remember you had like a whole bucket of Green Army Men, which nowadays, I mean, they won't even give that to kids because of the choking threat.
Right.
You know, but I remember we had, you know, the Green Army Men, and you had all the different kinds, you know, all the different guys. And I had a set of wooden building blocks. And me and my buddy Ed would set up these. We'd each get a certain number of building blocks, and we'd set up all the Green Army Men, and we each had rubber bands. And you alternated shots. You know, so whoever had the last Green Army guy standing won. And as a kid, that was, you know.
My brother and I did awesome. The exact same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Growing up with the Green Army. We would set up forts, and then you'd go to war.
Yep.
Jeff Wagerman is American Sniper. In theaters right now. Oh, starring Bradley Cooper. I like the... The electronic baseball, where it had a little panel on the back where it actually had like a selection of four different pitches you could throw. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're really any different than any other pitch, you know, but it felt like it when you were hey, curveball, here it comes. You know, it's this deep, deep, deep little dot going, but that was the money game for me back in the day. My parents did the old hide it behind the tree, like under the skirt that goes around the Christmas tree.
The late Christmas gift.
You're like, it's all done.
You got all the socks and underwear. You're like, great, Mom and Dad. I'm so thrilled.
Isn't that the worst when, like, you try to plan like, for, like, the last one, and the last one turns out to be, like, underwear or something. You're like, wait a minute, how did I miscalculate?
Right.
How does this box contain underwear? That just seems wrong.
Yeah, when I got the long box under Christmas, though, that was a pretty cool deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old Marlin Model 336C, 3030. Yeah. Yeah, that was good stuff.
All right, Jeff Logman, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Let's go to Mike next up on Jaguars today, 641-1010, the number. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. I wanted to ask about blocking punts. I know we've had a few blocked against us. People have scored. I know the Vikings blocked a couple and scored two in one game. And, of course, you know, with our offense and the, you know, production not being great, it looks like maybe we could use one of those and score off of that. But seems like that we, the Jaguars, just never try to do that. Seems like a guy like Kelvin Smith with his quickness might could get to one. Jeff, why is that?
Well, I mean, they definitely have gone after punts before, but have not had any success yet. You know, one of the things that I like about the Jaguars special teams, I think they have an excellent special teams coach in Mike Mallory. And I think that the more talent that this roster gets, you know, last year, I thought that they did exceptionally well considering all the roster turnover that they had on special teams. And I think this year you haven't had as much turnover, but you've had some injuries at positions that typically affect special teams. Linebacker, tight end, and also cornerback, defensive back. Those have probably been the positions that have been hit the most with injuries this year, and I think that that's given them a little bit of inconsistency on their punt team and also on their punt return team. And I think that impacts the team. You know, the Baltimore game, the block punt for a touchdown, in which the guard, it wasn't Will Tofoe, it was the guard. It's a matter of counting. That was a bad mistake. The field goal protection has gotten significantly better. Josh Scobie has gotten better with more elevation on his kicks. But they try. But it's not very often that you block a kick in the National Football League. And it just seems like this year, and it has happened way too much, that the Jaguars have given up block kicks. They need to start getting some of them themselves. But, for example, Telvin Smith, does he have great speed to be able to do that? Absolutely. Absolutely. Ziggy Hood has been exceptional on punt return this year. Tyson Alualu has been very good on punt return this year. But the more talent that you get, the more talent as far as depth, the better your special teams are going to be.
I know, I remember you saying about midway through the season, maybe around the team's bye week, that you felt like they were close, that they were going to get a block at some point on field goal. This year, do you still feel that way? Watching them on tape,
they're getting better. You know, the one guy that I think is giving great effort on field goal blocks is Derek Marks. I mean, the guy's been fantastic all year long, not only as a defensive tackle, but also as a guy trying to block kicks. Red Bryan has gotten close a couple times. Tyson Alualu has gotten close a couple times. You know, sooner or later, it's going to come. You know, I don't know when or if it's going to happen this year, but they've got some guys that have the ability to do that.
Mark Long has tweeted a trivia question for the gang here.
For us?
Yes. Today's trivia question, how many guns and or rifles, firearms, does Jeff Logman currently own? How many has he ever owned? Like how many guns have passed through your hands that you've been an owner of? Do you know the number you have right now, or do you care to share that number with us?
I don't know. I'd have to
come knock on my door and find out. But so if you don't know, I'm going to say it's more than two, right? It's several. If you don't know,
it's enough.
It's enough. It's enough to get the job done, yeah. Whatever that job happens
it's,
to
it's
be.
It's enough to make sure that the knock on the door is very loud to let you know or let me know you're there.
Right. what would you say? Seriously, like 20, 50? How many different guns have you owned in your? How often do you, like growing up, did you have a gun your whole childhood or anything?
No, I don't have a ton, I did not have a ton growing up as a kid. My grandfather actually had one heck of a collection and then had a thief break in and
really?
Take a lot of it. And I was able to keep two pieces of that collection that weren't where, the thief ended up getting access to, which I take great pride in the two that my great grandmother, my grandfather had, Royal King. That was his name, by the way.
Royal King.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my grandfather's name.
In case we didn't get it when we named him King, we'll throw Royal in there.
Yeah, that was my mom's maiden name. His name, my grandfather's name was Royal King, and he named his first son Merlin.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that? All right, there you go.
But,
how many,
a number on it? Enough to hunt all the species across the country.
There you have it, Mark Long. Now you know the rest of the story. Mark Long's eagerly anticipating a visit from Lauren Brooks. She should be leaving very shortly
yep.
to come our way and spend a few minutes with us here at Everbank in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. We'll take a time out here, come back with this date in football history and the Honda Drive around the NFL. It's 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
Kind of crossing the Rubicon here, Tony, the point of no return. Mm-hmm. Tyler Devitt is now officially the producer of Jaguars Today.
I know.
Congratulations, Tyler. You have a lot of big shoes to fill there. I don't know about a lot. I assume Lauren has a lot of shoes in the closet. She's a female. Probably a lot of shoes to fill in. They're not particularly big. They're just, I'm sure, just very stylish. But you get the point. LB's on her way down to the stadium. This date in football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. I'll start with the birthdays today. Paul Hornung, born in 1935 on December 23rd, the Golden Boy. Of course, went to Notre Dame. I believe the only guy to win the Heisman Trophy on a losing team, a team with a losing record. I want to say that were they like 2-9?
Something ridiculous.
I mean, something
like that.
Really bad.
Won it as a quarterback, played running back in the NFL, also played some kicker, and I think he is still the single season points record holder.
Also like to wager.
Yeah.
Got suspended for what, a year for gambling.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Bobby Ross, former coach of the San Diego Chargers. Is that the only team he coached? Only one I can. Georgia Tech, right? He came from Georgia Tech, went
Maryland,
to the Chargers.
Maryland
Chargers, as well.
Georgia Tech, and I don't think he came back to the NFL as a head coach.
I don't think so either. He's born in 1936. Jack Hamm, Hall of Fame linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers, born on this date in 1948. Jim Harbaugh's birthday, 1963. Happy birthday. You fired. All right? Take your
he'll
black
be,
shirt pleated khakis with you. He'll be fine. You
yeah.
think so?
He'll be just fine.
He's got that $8 million on the table. Michigan still hasn't hired a coach.
Has anyone ever had a three-year run where it's NFC Championship game, Super Bowl, NFC Championship game, and in the middle of your fourth year, they're like, we don't want you
they're
anymore?
They're done with this guy.
That's crazy.
Well, it tells you that he gets results, but at the same time, he's obviously incredibly difficult to
sure.
work with, you
well,
would
it's
think.
Kind of funny because, you know, when he was a player, you know, he really had a hard time working with Mike Ditka, you know, because Mike Ditka was viewed as an ogre
right.
to Jim.
Right.
And now Jim's become Mike.
Is that what he is? Is he the ogre? I know, you're right. He certainly has become a difficult guy to work with. Is it the personality? Is it the, you know, is he too old school? What is it you think that sets people off? I mean, he's an intense guy.
He's very abrasive. He's very intense, you know, and that sometimes doesn't work. Now, Trent Baalke, the general manager for the San Francisco 49ers, has done a tremendous job of assembling talent there in San Francisco. And, you know, look, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but I just know that Jim is extremely competitive and can be very abrasive. And sometimes that doesn't mix. It's like oil and water sometimes with another guy.
Couple of other things here, this date in football history. What's the most famous play, single play,
in NFL
history? Of the NFL, would you say?
I mean, the Immaculate Reception's got to be right up there.
What about
first
you?
Thing that came to my mind.
Well, happy anniversary, the Immaculate Reception, 1972, December 23rd, which, wait a minute, wasn't that a playoff game? Well, yes, it was. Okay, they used to play the playoffs a lot earlier back then. Shorter season, playoffs got started in December. Pittsburgh beat Oakland 13-7 in an AFC divisional playoff game. Franco Harris caught the ball. Jack Tatum separated Frenchy Fuqua from the ball. Remember, at that time,
who touched it first?
That was the question, right? Because if Tatum touched it, you couldn't advance an interception in which a defensive player had touched the ball first as an offensive player. Seems ridiculous, but then again, it wasn't that long ago in college football, you couldn't return a fumble at all for,
right.
you know, you had to fall on it, or even if you caught, I don't know if, maybe if you caught it out of the air, you're allowed to return it, but maybe not even
no.
then. It went to the spot,
no.
right?
Of
the recovery.
Went to the spot of recovery.
So you could not even advance a fumble because it was a safety issue. And I guess, it stopped being a safety issue? Oh, wait, no, it makes the game better. It's
one of, those dumb rules that needed to be changed, much like the old rule in the National Football League that the clock stopped on a sack, right?
So did it?
It used to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, you go back to the two-minute drill at the end of the game. If all of a sudden the defense sacks.
How long ago was that?
3-4 years ago that it changed.
What?
Yes.
Yeah. It was recent. When you got a sack, the clock stopped until they reset the
That's
ball.
Right. Until they reset the ball.
Yeah.
That's correct. But what? And so the whole argument was, and I used to have this conversation with Mike Pereira, because I was beating him up on it. I said, why should the defense be penalized
right.
when you get a sack. I mean, you make a positive play. Why should the clock stop to reset the ball and play?
What'd he say?
And when Mike Pereira, he said, I know, it's the rule that I want to change next year. And I was like, you got to change that. That's the dumbest thing. Of all the things in the rule book in the National Football League, that's the one that needs to be changed. And sure enough, the following year, before Mike Pereira departed to become a media expert in officiating, he got that rule changed.
You know what they call it now? The Loggeman rule.
No, it's not the Loggeman rule.
It should be. This date in football history, December 23rd, 2014. Oh, wait, that's today. Congratulations, Telvin Smith, for being nominated for the Pepsi Rookie of the Week for his performance this week against the Tennessee Titans, as he had 15 tackles, including 10 solo tackles, 3 tackles for zero or less, 2 tackles for no gain, 1 for loss, his first time primetime appearance of his career. Other nominees for the Pepsi Rookie of the Week include Dallas Cowboy linebacker Anthony Hitchens, Oakland Raider quarterback Derek Carr, and Bengals running back Jeremy Hill had the 85-yard touchdown run last night. And, oh, yeah, Odell Beckham Jr. Mm. Well, it's nice to be nominated at least, Delvin, because he ain't winning that one on a fan vote after Odell Beckham just won a bunch of people a fantasy championship over the last couple of weeks with his ridiculous performance. So there you have it. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway. If you're in the market for a family dentist, if you need cosmetic work done, or maybe you want to look into the custom fit stop snoring mouth guard, call 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Let's get to some quarterback news as we enter the final week of the NFL regular season. The Cleveland Browns signed rookie Connor Shaw from their practice squad yesterday, after learning that Johnny Manziel would be unable to play this week, and saying that Brian Hoyer originally was questionable, they said, with a shoulder injury. They're saying he may be upgraded to probable by the middle of the week and is expected to potentially start talking about Hoyer this weekend for the Browns. But if he can't go, then rookie Connor Shaw would get the ball. The Arizona Cardinals have said that rookie Logan Thomas will start for the team on Sunday against San Francisco. Thomas is 1-for-9 passing on the season, but the one was an 81-yard touchdown, which is one more touchdown pass than Ryan Lindley, the Card starter on Sunday night against the Seahawks, has thrown in 225 career pass attempts. Jay Cutler will be back in the starting lineup for the Bears on Sunday after Jimmy Clausen experienced delayed concussion-like symptoms following the Bears' loss to the Lions on Sunday. I don't know if you saw the shot he took from Ziggy Ansah.
Oh,
woo!
I did not.
It was like a missile. I mean, helmet-to-helmet missile flying in and just clocked him in the side of the head.
And he finished the game is pretty ridiculous.
Ziggy Ansah is a great player now. I mean, when I remember going back and watching, you know, that draft class, you know, it was Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, Ziggy Ansah. And I said, athletically, as far as gifted, Ziggy Ansah is the best in the class, period, bar none. Not even close. I mean, that guy does things. I mean, much like what Jason Pierre-Paul was like when you watched him coming out, what was it, South Florida? And you watched his athleticism, you were like, oh, my gosh. I mean, this guy's so raw, but he has such a gift. He's going to be tremendous. And he's turning into a great player.
Yeah, JPP did the 14 back handsprings in a row.
Yeah.
That thing hit YouTube. By the way, Logan Thomas, that's your guy, man.
Well, he's not my guy. He's a Virginia Tech guy.
Oh, that's right. He's Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I don't have any guys that are Virginia Tech guys.
No, that's right. That's complete faux pas, right.
Taboo
by the host.
One last little note: the Detroit Lions will be without starting center Dominic Raiola when they head to Lambeau on Sunday to play the Green Bay Packers with the division title and potentially the 1 or 2 seed in the NFC on the line. Raiola stepped on the ankle of Bears defensive lineman Ego Ferguson during this past Sunday's game. He said it was unintentional and apologized to Ferguson after the game. The league still handed down a 1-game suspension for Raiola. The Lions, by the way, if you didn't hear this yesterday, have lost 22 straight games at Lambeau Field.
Yeah, the anger's misdirected. Ego Ferguson's parents need to be stepped on for naming him Ego. First of all,
is it ego or ego?
Ego.
Keep your hands
E-G-O.
Off. Lay your hands off my ego. Wasn't that the commercial way back in the day?
Yeah. That's what was it? Lego my ego.
Yeah.
Lego my ego.
He also did not go to Virginia.
No, he did not.
So there you have it.
I'm glad.
Dominic Raiola's a pig, man.
Well,
this
I mean,
guy.
Look, I mean, but I kind of say, oh well, not that bad. I mean, people say the same thing about Ndamukong Suh. You know, and if you go back and you look at some of the history of this game, you know, the Conrad Doblers, the Ron Hellers, the guard that played for the Atlanta Falcons, what was his name? I mean, the league was full of Jack Tatum. I mean, full of guys that played beyond the whistle. I mean, and that's what made the game great. You know,
so cool with Rayola.
I have no problem with that. I have no problem.
What if
that.
He puts him out for the year?
Well, then, you know, that's part of the game. I mean,
really?
I mean, I just, you know, see, like, with Rayola, to me, that's just it's the passion and the emotion of the game, and it's not planned. Whereas versus, you know, a guy like Troy Polamalu jumping over the line of scrimmage before the ball is snapped, to me, as a planned event, I think that's it's a little different to me. Don't ask me why, and maybe I'm crazy for thinking that, but I'm okay with the game sometime guys stepping about outside the lines a little bit because it's rough and tough. But when it's planned, like Troy Polamalu putting guys at risk, jumping around the head and neck area, I have an issue with that.
Interesting. Interesting how Wagman differentiates things. That's fine. Bobby Ross also coached the Lions, by the way. Thanks
right.
to Robert Harris on Twitter at Hera10. So how quickly we forget those wonderful Bobby Ross.
I think Bobby
Detroit
Ross
days.
Was with the Lions when the great Herman Moore set the National Football League record for receptions in a season.
Which was at the time.
I think it was like 104.
I was going to say like 116.
Yeah, maybe it was 118, 104. I don't
see
know.
Where Herman Moore ranks.
I wonder if that was during the Bobby Ross era, but I think it was.
May have been, in fact. We'll check it out, but we got to take a timeout. We will come back, take more of your calls if you'd like at 641-1010. Don't forget to tweet all of us today, but certainly include at 1010XL Lauren, and just thank her for all the wonderful months she has spent as the producer of Jaguars Today, and how she has livened up and brightened up the show and the station as a whole. She's not going completely away. She'll still be a host of Helmets and Heels, but her final day today as producer of Jaguars Today. So you can share some well wishes at facebook.com/Jaguars Today or on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at logs56, LOGS56, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and of course at 1010XL Lauren. As well. We'll take a quick timeout, come back, 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Jaguars Today continues live from Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today continues live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Fan feedback spotlight brought to you every day by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships, asking you to just send Lauren Brooks out on a good note, give her a nice message of thanks for all the hard work she's done, and wish her well in her new job as a landscape architect, Tony. I'm very much looking forward to hiring her to redo the hedges at my house. It's going to be fantastic. Looking forward to that. That mean Mike Florio. He's always sticking it to Jacksonville. He's quite unbelievable. I mean, every time we have him on, I get such a backlash because it's clear to some people, they claim Mike hates Jacksonville and everything about it, including the fans. Had this to say in his latest power ranking, where he ranked the Jags 30th, the Tennessee Titans dead last, the Buccaneers 31st, the Jaguars in at 30, just behind the Jets, Bears, and the Raiders now up to 27. To say about the Jags, number 30 with a 3-12 record, quote, given the quality of the team, the Jaguar fans are by far the most loyal in the league. Wait a minute. That isn't negative. That isn't hateful. Oh. That doesn't fit the narrative, does it? Oh, excuse me. Forgot about that. I would concur. Jaguar fans are extremely loyal. Jeff, it's not just this year. It's been a running series of seasons and regimes that they've tried to stick by this team. Fan experience upgrade, great. On the field upgrade needs to come big time next year, doesn't it?
And it, you know, you expect it to come. I mean, you don't expect it to stay like this. It's certainly, I'm sure that the owner does not expect it to stay this way next year. You know, but I'm okay with what Mike Florio says. I mean, it's, you know, whether you give an opinion that's good, bad, or indifferent, if as long as you're talking about Jacksonville, that's a good thing. You know, it goes back to the old saying that, you know, sometimes any press is good press, you know, until you kind of get back to being an elite team. But you know what? This fan base has been extremely loyal, extremely patient. But this fan base also got some very early years that were unbelievable.
Yeah, spoiled them a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of them anyway, and you kind of understand that. By the way, I had a question for you, by the way, on Twitter.
For me?
Yes, for you.
Okay.
This is one from @SafaMM_M. Anyway, it says, on paper, Tyson Alualu is playing better than Red Bryant. I don't know if they're basing that on the meager stats that that position produces, but whatever the case, then he said, Logs, what is your opinion on who has played better this year, Red Bryant, Tyson Alualu?
I think that's a great question, and I would agree. I think that Tyson's been a little bit better. And the reason I say that is that Tyson gives them a little bit more flexibility, and that Tyson can play kick down and play three technique. Tyson could play a one technique at nose tackle. He's been extremely strong. He has made great progress from year one to year two playing this four-eye technique that Gus Bradley has in this defense, and it's a perfect fit for Tyson. You know, and a lot of people kind of are down on Tyson, and they have been because of where he was drafted at, but you got to be able to look past that and look at the production of the player. Tyson has been durable, consistent, and dependable. And I think that that's three of the most important traits to being able to fill a roster is with guys like that. And then you add to that that he has been flexible, has positional flexibility. It gives Tyson great flexibility, a little bit more than Red Bryant. But what would happen at the end of the season if Tyson's contract is up? It's going to be an interesting question.
It's a voidable year. I don't know who has the ability to void it. I don't know what the parameters
typically
are.
A voidable year is voidable for the player.
Right. If they reach a certain threshold.
It's up to the club in order to determine we want to keep him at this level or we don't.
I wouldn't. Would you think Tyson
it's very rare,
would void him?
It's very rare that the player has the option of voiding a year on his contract. Very rare.
So you think this is a team has
this
the option?
This is the team.
$2.4 million roughly.
He's worth every penny.
Bringing him back then.
Absolutely.
All right. So
I would.
No, I hear you. He made 2.37 this year, so it's not really. He's basically staying.
That's not a lot of money.
Basically flat.
I mean, it's a lot of money. Don't get. I mean,
sure. In the real world, it's a ton of money.
But in football, in the NFL, that's not a lot.
In roster construction, if the guy's an important part. Well, what about Red Bryant? Has he been what they expected him to be? Is it just that Tyson's playing well, or has Red not lived up to it?
No, I think Red's played well too, and I think he's played. He's been very stout. Tyson has the ability to run a little bit more than Red does. With Red, if it's in that area, he's very strong and very stout, and he allows a lot of other players to make plays off of his play. Tyson has the ability to run better than Red.
A little penetrate, you know,
penetration. Pursue.
Yeah.
Those things are better when it comes to Tyson.
All right. There you go. Let's get back to the phone lines here. 641-1010. We got Mark on hold, wants to talk about the offensive line, which we haven't spent any time talking about so far. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
How you doing today?
Good. What's up?
Listen, my question, has the Jaguars offensive line has improved from last year? Do you think so or no?
I think they have, and let me say it in this context. They overall, the performance may not be better than last year. It's probably maybe equal. But you're talking about building blocks, whereas last year none of the components were building blocks with the ability to ascend. And so I think from that perspective, yes, they're better. They clearly got a lot of room to improve on, you know, but I think that they will, you know, and look, I know that people criticize me for saying this, saying that I'm all sunshine and rainbows when I say this about the offensive line. And I'm sticking to my guns. I like this offensive line. I think it has the ability to be much improved next year with another year under its belt.
Company man.
Yeah, and they can say that all they want. And it's not about being company man. It's about being honest and being having the ability to share a straightforward opinion. Look, I get paid by the club. I'll be the first to admit that. But I've also been extremely critical of other components of this club. I've been extremely critical of the fact that Zane Beatles earlier in the year was terrible, was not worth what they paid him in free agency. He has gotten better over the last couple of weeks. And I still believe that this offensive line has the makings and the ability to be good. If you add a couple components to allow the competition to get better amongst certain positions, and I'm not talking about wholesale changes and adding four or five guys. You just add one or two pieces to this offensive line, allow what you have to get stronger, better, more experienced, and then with a little bit of competition, if you get one more guy or two more guys, all of a sudden everything becomes more competitive across the whole offensive line.
How do they play in particular this past Thursday, coming off the game in which the team collectively allowed 8 sacks? I know we try to parse how many are on the offensive line. Anytime you give up 8 sacks, it's, even if some of those aren't your fault, it's not a great game, I don't think, for offensive line play. Did they take a significant step forward against Tennessee, or how did you see it?
Well, I mean, you would expect to, because Tennessee is not the Baltimore Ravens. You know, I mean, the drop-off in performance there, you know, you got Doomerville and Suggs, and
right,
then you go to not Doomerville and Suggs, you know. But Jarrell Casey, really good player, and I think the Tennessee Titans have him miscast, but a step down in performance. But I thought that the outside first-round pick, defensive end,
Derek
from Georgia
Morgan.
Tech.
They tried Morgan, to send him to the Pro Bowl.
Derek Morgan is a good football player. He's not a great football player, but he's a good football player. And he stressed Sam Young.
Yeah, he did.
And he beat Sam Young a couple times. Luke Jokel, I thought, played pretty well. He matched up a lot against Jarrell Casey. He was a little soft at times, but you're talking about a 325-pound defensive tackle lining up and bull rushing all the time. That's going to happen. You know, so, but I thought the rest of the guys, they played well. I thought Brandon Linder probably played an excellent game, but mainly because the last time that he played against the Tennessee Titans was his worst game of the year. That was the game that he was not good at all.
Might have been the only one that you
only
came
good
back and
only
said
game that
he
had
a good game, yeah,
exactly, that was not very good. So, and I think Bo Wankel continues to play very well, where he can block a shaded nose. He gets to the second level very well. You know, look, I'm going to stick to my guns. You know, people can call it what they may. I'm encouraged about this offensive line, and I'm going to stay that way because I think they are going to be good.
We just like to give you a hard time.
That's great.
Some people are serious about it, though.
Look, I'm all about being challenged. Challenge me on anything you want to.
I mean, right. Well, I mean, your opinion is not based on guesswork. It's based on watching the film and breaking it down the way you see it.
I've been watching this game, you know, close for 26 years, you know, 26 years I've been watching this game. And I think that Luke Bo Wankel has the ability to be a very, very good player. Brandon Linder is a very, very good player. Luke Jokel has talent that you just can't coach. You know, much like Marquise Lee early in the season, we just kept talking about how great of an athlete he is, how explosive he is. The one-on-one drill that he had back in training camp that I sat there and talked with you with back in camp and told you that was the greatest one-on-one drill for a wide receiver that I had ever seen in camp. Now, look, I haven't been around a lot of great wide receivers, but I've been around some pretty good ones, Jimmy, Keenan, Art Monk, Altoon, you know, and that was the most dominant one-on-one drill I've ever seen. And I wasn't going to change what I said back then just because Marquise Lee wasn't playing. Now we're starting to see what we saw in that one-on-one drill now out of Marquise Lee.
Yeah, taking some of that ability and translating it to production on the field. Before we break here, defensively in the game, I think overall people have been pretty happy the way the defense has been playing. In particular this week, Telvin Smith, we mentioned he's up for Pepsi Rookie of the Year or over the week with 15 tackles. Who else stood out to you on that side of the football?
Avery Jones. You know, Avery Jones playing for the injured Roy Miller played really well. You know, and he's been playing well for a while. I think I've talked about him before here. I've showed him before on Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com. I mean, I like the way he played. I think you're talking about an undrafted guy that Dave Caldwell got for nothing. That is, there was no drop off with Avery Jones. I mean, just as far, maybe just a little bit, just because of the conditioning level maybe wasn't quite there, but he was still exceptionally good.
And that's a guy they developed, because you said initially you're like,
I was kind of
eh
on him.
That's a credit to the coaching staff for.
Well, credit to Dave Caldwell.
Credit to him for finding, but also to take that guy that may not have been where he is right now and getting him there.
You got to give credit to two places. One is Dave Caldwell for finding a guy that's undrafted and for seeing him pre-injury and to saying, hey, look, this guy really has a chance to be a really good football player. The more guys you find like that undrafted, I mean, that's great. But Todd Walsh, the defensive line coach, and I like to say I know a thing or two about defensive line, I think he is maybe one of the best, if not the best, defensive line coaches in the National Football League right now. And one of the reasons I point that, you look at the performance of Avery Jones, you look at the further development of Tyson Alualu making a positional change over the last 2 years, you look at an undrafted guy like Ryan Davis from Bethune-Cookman who has found a role and a niche with his football team where he's extremely productive. And most importantly, you have a guy in Chris Clemons in his 11th year who the Seattle Seahawks just basically pushed out the door because he was in his 11th year and they said, we don't need you anymore. Okay, and they could have afforded him. He comes here, and in last week's game against the Tennessee Titans, you're talking about going from a Super Bowl team to now a team that's under construction, and you're going in against the Tennessee Titans. You're 2-12.
And so are they.
You're 2-12. Okay, and Chris Clemons was balling. I'm talking balling. He didn't have a sack in a game, but the effort that he played at in that game was unparalleled. Something that was, to me, that really shows, one, the kind of person and the kind of competitor that Chris Clemons is. But also, it goes back to what I was just saying about the best defensive line coach in the NFL, and Todd Walsh, because you have to be able to motivate guys from all across the board. From an undrafted young player like an Avery Jones all the way to a Chris Clemons, a guy who played for a Super Bowl team. Now he's on a 2-12 team. And yes, it's national TV and you want to play well, but you still got to motivate a guy like that. He could be here just for the check. Chris Clemons was not playing just for a check the other night and was a big reason why Senderek got a $600,000 bonus on that play.
That's right. Well, he created that play and Senderek cleaned up.
That's
and,
right.
You know, Senderek's made plenty of plays for other guys this year too. So, it's fitting that, Clem did that, but he really did make that play to the fact that you thought he had him at first. He thought he was going to end the game, but Senderek Marks came in and cleaned up.
But the effort that he played at, Chris Clemons, I'm talking about, the effort that he played at in that game. And look, you expect that out of everybody, but I'm talking the effort, you know, down in, down out, especially down the stretch when you're play after play after play of pass rushing, which can wear a guy out. He brought every ounce that he had on every play. It impressed the hell out of me.
Just like Jeff Logman does every Tuesday, ladies and gentlemen, brings it, doesn't come up for the paycheck. Are you kidding me? I know what they pay him. He's certainly not coming here for the paycheck.
Not much.
Right. So, when we return, we'll be joined by the host, one of the, maybe the star, I guess, of Helmets and Heels. I don't think she has any other titles associated with 1010XL, former producer of Jaguars Today. By the way, give Tyler a follow on Twitter, at Tyler Devitt, TylerDevitte, our brand new producer as of about 32 minutes ago here on Jaguars Today. We'll welcome Lauren into the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. What do you got Fortunato on over there?
I woke up this morning in an incredibly good mood and looked outside, and there's a beautiful haze outside and kind of foggy.
Haze Carline?
And I'm thinking of the song Morning Dew.
Okay? Go ahead.
Which
fire
is
it up,
an
Joey.
Oldie but a goodie.
Take me for a walk in the morning dew, my love.
He's getting his hippie on this morning. He's like, this is not how I remember this song.
That's not the version that I'm thinking of, but I like that version. It's 1962, Bonnie Dobson. The other one that I was thinking of is that Nazareth did one. It was a little bit more edgy. But that wasn't the one that I was thinking of either. Might have been
call
Jeff
song
Beck.
Edgy?
The edgy version. This is clearly not the edgy version.
No, this is not the edgy version right here.
Lauren Brooks, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, thanks. You're a little bittersweet, but I'm good.
Let's introduce you to the audience.
Sure.
Lauren Brooks is the star and co-host of Helmets and Heels, which mm-hmm. you can hear on Tuesday nights right here on 1010XL. Also, the star of the Jaguars pregame show, the Public's Tailgate Show.
Clearly,
she runs the parking lot.
Clearly the star of that one, considering I'm on 4 minutes of the 2 hours
That's
that the show
runs.
That's
the best 4 minutes of radio.
Eight minutes of the 4 hours.
I'm told former producer of Jaguars Today as well. Can you confirm?
I can confirm. I'm no longer pushing the button.
Within the last hour, you've been retired from the job. Would you have ever played Morning Dew? Is there a theme you could have mixed that in with? Would that be the, the tears in Jaguar fans' eyes as they were losing games early?
No, it's a happy morning when you wake up to a Jaguars game.
Okay.
That's a stretch.
Is that right? I was thinking, sure. is that what O'Halloran drinks his morning Mountain Dew to wash down that bag of candy he has for breakfast sometimes?
Along with the cough drop.
Yeah, he'll mix it all together. He'll mix it all together.
I saw him on his way to practice.
It's behind the scenes at Jaguars today. How are they doing?
They're both good.
Are they fantastic?
Fantastic.
You look lovely today, by
Thank
the way.
You
always look lovely, but particularly so. Today, did you get some nice comments? We're going to look at some of the tweets people were sending.
You're going to try and make me cry.
We're
going to
try.
Yep. And you're going to be successful. I did. I actually, on my way into the control room this morning, had to go to the bathroom and take a little cry break
because the
tears were rolling down. I'm going to miss everyone. I really am. I mean, part of my job is to get to listen to people like Jeff tell stories when you ask, you know, him questions about this date in football history and he goes into stories. Part of my job was to actually listen to that. How much fun is that?
It's pretty good.
Right?
Beats working, that's for sure. Which is why we can't figure out why you'd go take a real job, but, you know, go figure. So settle it for, is it Sawgrass or is it Augusta National? You're going to be the head groundskeeper at which?
Both. I took the management position for both.
Well, that makes sense then. I mean, based on your skill level in the industry.
Right.
In all seriousness, what are you going to be doing in your...
I'll be an office manager at a landscape design company here in town. I'm not going anywhere.
So I've had it all wrong, you're telling me?
Just slightly off. There was some landscape in there, and as Tony said, I'll be picking out bushes and
shrubs.
Thank you, Tony.
Right here. Good place for a shrub.
I could use a new hedge at the house.
You know, I actually won't be doing any of that. I'll just be scheduling clients and taking payments and all the kind of behind-the-scenes stuff.
All right. Well, you're you know what they say, behind every semi-acceptable radio show, there's a great producer, and you were certainly the case with that, and I'm sure... Mm-hmm. That your new company will feel the same way having you on board. Now let's make her cry, Tony. What kind of feedback did we get today on Twitter where we just said, let's celebrate Lauren Brooks and the tenure she's had as producer of Jaguars today?
Here's what we got from Eric. He said, thanks and good luck in the future. Really enjoyed guessing the music theme each day. From Dusty.
I wonder how many times he got it.
I know. Thanks for a great job with Jaguars today. I hope your future is bright and your finger heals sometime in the next 10 years.
And I'm not wearing my cast because I didn't want to come in looking all silly, but it's still messed up.
You got that Larry Bird thing going on, man. That Tori Holt. You got...
Yep.
You're going to be...
That's
pointing.
Normal for me.
I know. I was kind of looking at yours when I got here, comparing. Sorry, Tony.
Kevin said, so sad that you're going. Your choice in music and in-ride share services is impeccable. from Austin, we got the listeners. We'll miss you, LB. Good luck in whatever you do. And please don't leave music choices up to Brent... Martineau, and Martineau actually responded in that thread with,
who's that country guy? Like Jason Aldean.
I know he loves Sister Christian.
We'd have Jason Aldean 3 days a week with Brent. Wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Garth Brooks.
So there you go.
Probably a little bit. Oh, we had Facebook today. Christopher Moore, may God bless you, and thanks for the awesome songs and themes. People loved your little niche there. Luis Osoria. Good luck, Lauren. The show definitely took a hit in the looks department with you leaving. Hashtag Jaguars today. Concur.
Poor Tyler.
It's not you, Tyler. It's us, okay? Bob Tankersley, going to miss your songs and themes, Lauren. Good luck. Cass Bridges, you will be missed. LB, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good luck with the new job. Anthony Coles, will definitely be missed. Good fortune in future endeavors, and many smileys to follow. Jordan Rowell said, LB, you are the bee's knees, and we will miss you. Go Jags. Alan Lynn, great job, Lauren. Good luck with the plants. Carla Castle Duffy, you will be missed. Lauren, thank you for all your hard work. Nick Carnes, I wish you nothing but the best of luck in your future endeavors, Lauren. They all love you, LB.
I did see one that mentioned we're not going to get the Lauren laugh or snort anymore.
Can we get... See, that? I never know, Jeff, when that's like live or she's just doing it for Tony and I. So it's hard to know when to react to that. But
usually it's just in your ear because I didn't think most people wanted to hear that.
She just like, hey, you know, in the middle of
some
whatever the case
really
may be.
Funny, but no, I mean...
What a special job to be able to work in a place where people you don't know wish you those kinds of things and the best of luck and, you know, all happiness. That's really touching to me. I really appreciate
everyone.
They
feel like
listening.
They know you, though.
I guess so.
You're a very likable person. Seriously, there will be, if there are three of those, if I were to die tomorrow, I might get three of those, and that one of them would be for my wife, and the other two would be sarcastic.
That is not true. I had somebody call in, and they said that, you know, they were terribly sorry to say goodbye. They love the show. They love Jeff, especially
they
on
certainly
Tuesdays.
Love Jeff.
Everyone
they love
loves
Tuesdays.
Jeff. And they also said,
they
know,
tolerate Osier.
No, they like Osier. He has his own fan following. And then they said, but I'm happy I don't have to say goodbye to Mike. That was just today. See?
Right.
So are you leaving for good?
So I'll still do some of the radio shows, so I'm not leaving for good, no.
Okay.
I'm not moving. I'm not, thankfully, dying. I'm just taking a different job during the day so that I can
That's great.
Not have multiple jobs.
Yeah. And then you'll be moonlighting as a evening
I don't know where you're going
radio
with this.
Personality.
Yeah, radio personality. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Where did you think
he's you sounded nervous.
Jeez. Who do you think is... describing this here.
Does helmets and heels go away after the football season?
So right now it's scheduled at least through January, and I don't know what's going to happen after that. But
I mean, because it could be a baseball helmet.
True. And we've all talked about how much we would like to keep it going. I think it just depends on programming schedules. We have a lot of basketball games upcoming, baseball, so it just depends on the schedules. We'll see.
Would you ever be available to be a fill-in host on Jaguars Today, say, tomorrow?
Let me check my calendar. Yes, I can do tomorrow.
Excellent. So, you know what? Let's say goodbye and let's say hello to Lauren with Jessica Blaylock in here tomorrow. The question is, who's running the show?
I assume that she's going to be doing most of the in and out stuff just because, you know, she's pretty much a professional. and then I'll of course help out with this date in football history. And the Honda driver on the NFL.
What do you think? Are we the only ones here in Tyler right now?
We are the only ones here in Tyler.
Because it would be really funny if all of Jacksonville was here to tell somebody in the control room, yeah, I feel like my first hour's going pretty smoothly so far.
I was wondering about that.
Except for this hot mic right here, right there. Tyler, get used to it, buddy.
I was talking to good old Rakeef back here.
Rakeef, what might have been? Rakeef was he's got too many career things going on too, Tyler.
Busy man.
I'd say you don't, Tyler. This is a great stepping stone to landscaping jobs in the future. All right. So, we look forward to Tyler. Say hello to everybody out there.
What's going on, Jacksonville?
Tyler, you're here on the pre and post game shows with the pre and post game shows with Hacker and Lamb, Hacker and T-Wig on Sundays doing updates. He's been around for a while working behind the scenes and we look forward to working with him. In the future. I say that now because, you know.
He'll be great.
He doesn't know any better.
Well, if I could be half as good as the legendary Lauren Brooks, I think I'll be all right.
Way to suck up, Tyler.
I don't know. Half of Lauren.
Oh, yes.
LB, Merry Christmas to you. We love you. You're fantastic. It was awesome working with you. It was a traumatic experience. Donna Murphy and I were together for like 4 years. And you made my transition into post-Donna life a very successful and happy one. And so thank you very much for all you've done for us. You're phenomenal. We love you. Anything we can do for you, including opening up the show to you tomorrow. All you got to do is say the word. All right?
I'll be back.
All right, stop it. Don't.
I can see a little water in going on.
She needs a bathroom break right now. LB, we love you. There she goes, Lauren Brooks, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you call in tomorrow. Talk with Lauren and Jessica right here on Jaguars Today. Loggy, Merry Christmas to you, sir.
And to you, Mike.
It's been a great season. It's not done yet.
Yeah.
We'll catch up with you next Tuesday. Obviously, I'll talk to you on the pregame show coming up on Sunday as the Jags wrap up the season. And hopefully all the way through, you know, right around NFL playoff time, Super Bowl, and all that, we'll call it an off season at that point in time. So
I'm looking forward to it.
You got it, buddy. Have a great holiday weekend and the rest of the week.
And real quick, just Merry Christmas to all the listeners.
Absolutely. All of you out there. Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, whatever you celebrate at this time of the year. Certainly celebrate it with your family, your friends. Be smart. Don't be stupid. Don't go drinking and driving or anything like that and ruin a great
day. Be smart because this is my last opportunity because Thursday, Christmas night.
Correct.
There's no Gus Bradley show. There's no Jaguars Thursday. So Merry Christmas to all.
There you go. Jeff Logman, folks. Tony?
I'll be back tonight. Thank you.
See you tonight on Fat Tuesdays.
Yeah, baby.
Right there. Can we get a quick shot of that with you and Tony so we can tweet that out? That's got to go out.
Absolutely.
That absolutely has to go out there. All right, for Jeff, for Tony, for Tyler, for Joe Fortunato, and for the lovely and spectacular Lauren Brooks, I'm Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today. Lauren and Jessica back with you tomorrow right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.